And he's Assistant Vice President of Drug Information at the American Society of Health System Pharmacy. And I think you're going to find it very interesting to listen to his presentation, which is a little different, but gives us some new ideas. The problem is prescription confusion. When you read a label, do you think it's another language? What is it that you're dealing with? I want to talk about 2006, where the research was. This is research of Terry Davis and Mike Wolf. Five simple prescription labels. Take one tablet once a day, take one teaspoon three times a day. Nothing complicated in them. Just under 400 patients asked, how would you take this medicine? 46% did not understand the instructions on one or more label. But the scary thing is that 38% of patients with adequate literacy levels, reading above 10th grade level, made a mistake on at least one label. And almost nobody paid attention to the warning labels, the auxiliary labels. So the most common mistake, take two tablets twice daily. And then you say, so how many tablets would you take during the day? And college-educated people said two instead of four. Something about the word twice made them think time of day, not doubling the dose. So our problem is not just limited literacy skills on a literacy scale. We have a much bigger problem in comprehension and the problem with error rates. You know, when we're talking 700,000 emergency room visits, 120,000 hospitalizations. So what's our journey to a patient-centered label? And I'm going to go fast at this point. 2007, the Institute of Medicine had a roundtable on health literacy and medication use container instructions to improve medication safety. The report in 2008, many different groups came together at that Institute of Medicine workshop. Among them was the United States Pharmacopeia. The feeling of all of them was we have to standardize this chaotic world and try to find some way to provide the information that patients need to take medication safely. And USP sets standards for drugs, has done that for 20 years for manufacture of drugs and the labels on the drugs. And so they offered to set up to convene everybody in an expert panel. So the panel started in 2008. This is the USP Safe Medication Use Expert Committee. Determine optimal prescription label content and format to promote safe medication use. By critically viewing factors that promote or distract from patient understanding of prescription medication instructions, create universal prescription label standards in format and appearance, as well as in content and language. So here's just a list of where the problems are. How do you organize a prescription in a patient-centered manner so patients can read it and get the information they need quickly? What about explicit instructions? What do they need to be? How do you improve readability? Typography, what size should the font be? What do you do with white space? How do you simplify language? How do you address limited English proficiency, purpose of use, visual impairment? Here's just an example. What happens if you send a prescription, so Lipitor 10 milligram POQD, the doctor writes, and the research was you send it out to a bunch of different pharmacies and you get it in many different forms back. Take one tablet daily, take one tablet by mouth for high cholesterol, take one tablets with an S, so is it plural? Are you taking more than one? Take one tablet orally every day for high cholesterol. Many different ways to write the same things. The PO from the pharmacy across the street from me has been translated into medications that we have picked up from the same physician. So it's the same computer answering, saying, daily, take it by mouth, take it orally, take it per oral route. So it can be many, many different versions. And if you have trouble understanding, you can have a lot more trouble because it never looks the same. The idea of standardizing was if it always was the same way, the first line you could tell patients is your name, the second line is going to be the drug, the third line is going to be how you take the drug, you always will see a prescription label. That way you can begin to have some sense of security that you're doing it correctly. So we worked for a good many years, got a chapter together for the USP general textbook that they turn out, chapter 17. It went out for public comment. We got about 300 comments. they got adapted. It became official in May of 2013 and is currently being revised. I'll tell you a little bit about that if we get a chance. I'm worried about the time. So just your patient-directed information must be organized in a way that best reflects how most patients seek out and understand medication instructions. That's the principle, okay? Simplifying language, one of the things, as we looked at the research, sentence case is much easier to read than the individual words. Caps, all caps that many prescription labels use are very difficult to read. Giving explicit instructions, so take one tablet in the morning and one tablet in the evening. And there's research on all of this. Purpose for use, limit the auxiliary information, improving readability, don't use abbreviations, try to keep labels so that you don't have to, you can read it without having to turn the container. High contrast print, font size, 12 point font, in very simple font. Many prescription labels are about 8 point font, so much bigger so that people can read it. What kind of white space? Again, some of the things in all of the research that's actually out there is very helpful if you're working on any kind of written patient information or public health information. Take a look at what's in the chapter because it's useful. Limited English proficiency. The danger in very poor translations. Yes, you have many people who have difficulty understanding English, but the computerized translations are often full of errors. There are a lot of horror stories. And so the recommendation was it either has to be a high quality translation or it should be in English and you should use an interpreter. And we'll get back to that in a minute. The new ones look at visual impairment. The main thing about visual impairment is that it should have the same information that you have on the written label. You shouldn't truncate the information because you're putting it into Braille or something else. The universal instructions. Here's just an example of universal medications scheduling. Standard instruction, take one inhalation twice daily. The improved instruction would be sentence-wise, one puff in the morning and one puff in the evening every day. And the health literacy principles. This is what an enhanced label with the universal medication schedule looks like. Two pills in the morning, two pills in the evening, and there's a little graphic at the bottom that shows you what time you take the medicine. And here's the research on it, which is really very interesting that Mike Wolf did in 11 federally qualified health centers. A standard label, the understanding, you know, tell me, read it and tell me how you're going to take the medicine, 59%. With a patient-centered label, it went up to 74%. Now, patients got no instructions. They gave their prescription into the pharmacy. They were given one or the other label with no comments from the pharmacist. But the interesting thing is 3 months later, in terms of adherence, those with a standard label were 30%. Those with the patient-centered label were 49%. It's a big help, but it sure doesn't solve all the problems, right? So I wanted to at least show you that. And just a little bit at the end, where we are as of October 11th, 2015, Governor Brown in California signed new legislation that sets 15 sets of standardized patient-centered instructions for each language. And I think there are 5 or 6 different languages that are going to be required, that the pharmacies have to be able to provide labels in those languages using the carefully translated sets of instructions, and these are what they look like. Things like take one pill at bedtime, take one pill in the morning, take two pills in the morning and two pills at bedtime. But anyway, clearly tested language so that they will be able to be instructions in their own language that people can take home, which is certainly much better than just one discussion with an interpreter, and then you have to remember when you get home with nothing to rely on. So that concludes Jerry's presentation, and we kind of skipped through a lot of it, but I wanted you to take a look at it because another piece of information about what can make a difference. So, questions for me or for...
So I just want to string together as you talk, because one of your big findings that we don't know anything very specific. Every one of those instructions has a research finding behind it that tells us why we would do those.
And that's why I said standardization is where you have the greatest promise, because of what we have in terms of the literature base. That literature base is starting. It's not fully conclusive. I mean, I can take some of the studies that go back in terms of standardization. One of the things that happened, for instance, when we moved from a body of research that goes back 60 or plus years in patient-physician communication, moved to the health literacy rubric, sometimes we have to go back to that broader body of literature. And that's why I said that. In terms of the standardization, sometimes it is the science we go. We know it works. What we have to do is get into the evidence base around some of these techniques so that we can actually make that very conclusive in terms of an evidence-based review.
Sure, but I just want to be clear that in terms of the language, I think the data is a little bit more compelling than maybe it was presented. And I wouldn't want anybody to not take seriously that it's very important to write clearly,
yes,
using plain language,
absolutely,
and language that people understand. It's critical. And even if you don't feel like there's a gold standard that says this is the thing every time, it's kind of a social justice right thing to do to be a simple.
Believe me, but in terms of an evidence-based review, I'm really required to
be careful on the question. Right?
Yes.
And,
so this might be I can make a lot of arguments with some of the things you said in the middle of your talk, and I think a lot of us probably could. I don't know all of you, but. So, but at the end, you said, you know, that what's missing is an understanding of health literacy that's broadly accepted, which I think is we need a better definition of health literacy. And now, listening to this exchange, I'm thinking maybe what you did, you started with that 2004, a 10-year-old definition
that
even the people who wrote it don't agree with anymore, mm-hmm, and acted like that was the hallmark. But if you use that understanding of health literacy as the basis for your systematic reviews, that's why you're missing stuff like the value of plain language and the evidence base that exists. So I think that what might strengthen your work, you've done a lot of work, but I think you can strengthen it by, you know, expanding your definition of what is health literacy. You will find more evidence out there. And what you also find, by the way, if you do that, is that the evidence for teach back isn't as strong as you suggested it is in comparison to the other interventions in the field.
But the results are actually even consistent with the updated ARC report. If I look,
is also based on that old definition.
Yes, it
of
is.
Health.
Exactly, it is.
So,
that's the challenge.
Right?
Let's have, we have another question.
This is just a comment. So you use terms like everyday language and plain language. Well, I'm a pharmacist, and I use terms like prophylaxis and bowel movement.
Well, I think that one of the points, and that's why I wanted you to see the research on twice daily, right? Because that's very simple language, and people don't understand it. So I think you have to start with the assumption that even though you're going to simplify and try to use lay language as much as you can, you still have so many different understandings because of who you are and how you were raised culturally and everything else and the way you use language. The other person may not use language the same way, which is why you need enough time, right, to say, did you understand, right? Can you summarize? Can you tell me how you're going to make this work when you get home? What are you going to do? Truly important. If you're teaching communication skills, you know, the two things. One is make sure you understand the patient, number one, and number two, make sure the patient understands you, and whatever you have to do that. And in understanding the patient, we teach doctors, and I think others, that after you've gotten the history and you've lots of time and asked questions, you say, okay, you've talked about a lot of things, let me summarize them, and you tell me if I missed anything or if you think of anything else, and you summarize for the patient before you go on to the next to the examination of the patient. That models the teach back that you're going to ask at the end of the visit. And that's the way that you explain. It comforts the patient to know that you really listen to them. And actually, it comforts the physician if the patient can actually do the teach back. They feel much better about what they're doing. So again, we don't have all the proof in the research, and I understand that, but we have to move on right now with lots of patients and what we're doing. I think the work that Jerry's done in trying to move towards standardization, and all of the people in pharmacy that are working on that, is very, very important work. It's maybe been more successful setting standards because it's just narrow, looking at this one problem, whereas if you look at the wealth of information you were looking at, it's all over the place. Different kinds of populations, different kinds of illnesses, different kinds of professionals involved. It's very hard to pull it together. So anyway, talk too much. We have some other questions. I know we're running late. We really appreciate, you've been a great audience, and I want to thank you all for coming, and thank our presenters.